You're listening to Streaming Justice, a live four-hour webcast exploring civil rights accomplishments, challenges, and dreams for the future, and hosted by teens from throughout the region at SLB Radio Studios in the Children's Museum of Pittsburgh.
This is Sienna Rodriguez. I'm a 17-year-old, and I'm a senior at PA Distance Cyber. I just wanted to talk about social justice, pretty much. It's such a broad topic, and it can be narrowed down to so many different subtopics, from women's issues to colorism, to racism, to so many different things. I noticed that, like, colorism is a big topic, and it's not really discussed about because of just the ignorance, I guess, towards the issue. And our country, if it was like a cloth, colorism has been so tightly sewn into this fabric, and it's just how we identify others, how we identify ourselves, and it's just how we were conditioned to live in this country. And it's been ingrained in our brains, and that's just how we've been brought up. Hard to identify colorism, because colorism and racism are just so closely related, but then they're so contrasting in their own ways. Like, there's even racism within the Black community between different skin tones, and that's in relation to colorism. I've never really experienced, like, racism firsthand. All the places I lived in Eastern PA, because I was just so younger, I wasn't as aware of what was going on. And then moving to the city in New York and then coming back to Western PA was the first time I've ever experienced racism firsthand. And I've experienced it in my workplace. And it wasn't a good experience, because my mom's instilled in me to be proud of where I'm from, be proud of my culture, be proud of my people. And then having someone treat me harshly because of just who I am, it was eye-opening. Like, this is, like, a real thing. Racism and, like, colorism was just, like, stuff you heard in the textbooks. It was stuff just like, oh, that can't happen. Like, it's 2017. That doesn't happen to this day, you know? And experiencing that firsthand just really woke me to the issues that are going on.
You mentioned that you haven't seen, experienced racism firsthand, but when you said that, I started to think of some of my experiences with it, because I have experienced it firsthand. In thinking about that, it's not fun. Nobody should ever have to go through that. I'm going to tell a little story real quick. One day I was in the store, and I was like 8 or 9, and I was very young. And I was with my mom, and I'm trying to go to the checkout line. I was in the back of the store, and I was walking. And someone was just standing in the middle of the aisle doing nothing. And very politely, I said, "Excuse me, sir, can you please move out of my way so I can get through?" And he just stood there and he looked at me and just went back to doing his business, didn't move, didn't do anything. And then I asked again, and same thing happened. And then my mom started to step in. And she was very angry, and I remember on the car ride home from the store, she was talking to me about that, basically told me to never let anybody treat you like that, because nobody should ever have to go through that. Nobody should ever have to experience racism, because it was a thing of the past and it shouldn't be gone by now. The sad reality of it is that it's not.
It's not gone, and it hasn't disappeared, and I feel like with so many, like, issues going on, because racism and colorism has never really gone away. I just feel like it's, from the presidential election, it just heightened everything, and it just brought all these underground racists back to the surface, to thinking that these ways are okay and that this is an okay thing to do. It's an okay way to think, and it's not. And it's being ingrained in our kids and, you know, our friends, and just everyone around us is watching this, and they're like, oh, well, since they can do it, it must mean it's okay. It's okay for these things to happen. It's everyone's opinion, but it's not, you know, an opinion. It's teaching about hate. It's trying to undo everything that we've been fighting for these past generations. And with your experience, that just, no one should experience racism firsthand, and racism shouldn't be a thing. We're all just here trying to live on the same space, you know? And why complicate things even further with something as silly as where you come from? Because a lot of people in this country can't help that they came here. They came here to escape their country and their country's negative problems. People from, you know, Asia, from the Hispanic countries, Hispanic Latino countries, from Africa. A lot of African Americans in this country can't even help the fact that they were born and raised here. Their ancestors were brought here like hundreds of years ago, and they can't help the fact that they are here now, but they can try to make the difference, speak for their ancestors, because their ancestors were very limited. They were speaking in their native tongue. They didn't know what was going on. And now that we're learning about these things, we're shedding light about all these things from movies, from books, from even firsthand experiences, we need to just bring more focus to these issues. And I feel like racism and colorism is just a great place to start.
From what I've seen, racism, the reason it still exists is because people's parents, they teach them at a very young age, and those people that are taught that certain way, they are ingrained to see the world the way that they were taught, and they don't really look outside of that, and they just think, I was taught this, so it must be true, when in actuality, not everything you see in the media, not everything that you're taught is true 100%. Yes, everybody has their opinions, and yes, everybody develops opinions based on some fact that has been made, that has been declared to be true 100%. But just because you developed it off of a fact, or just because you were taught that way, doesn't make it right, or it doesn't make it true 100%.
Yeah, we have to undo what we've learned from our parents and learn to think for ourselves. And it's being passed down from generation to generation, and that's why it's still continuing. It's just the fact that if we let it continue, then I don't want to say everything that Martin Luther King did went in vain, you know? Like, he was put in jail so many times. He was beaten, and he had such a long fight, he didn't get to finish it where he wanted to. And if he could see just how things are today and how so much, almost 60 years has passed and not that much has changed from what he did, it's really sad. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back.
What does freedom mean to you?
Freedom is love and care. Freedom means to do anything you want to do.
Freedom means to be responsible.
Freedom is loving who you are.
This is Sienna Rodriguez. I'm 17 years old, and I'm a senior at PA Distance Charter Cyber School.
And my name is Damari Evans. I'm 17 years old, and I'm a senior at Central Catholic High School in Pittsburgh.
And if you're just joining us, you're listening to Streaming Justice, music and conversation about civil rights, past, present, and future, in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King Day. We are going to talk about the Black Lives Matter movement. Just before coming in for this segment, I was looking at photos from the March on Washington, and I was comparing them to images from the Black Lives Matter protest, and they almost look identical. The Black Lives Matter movement pretty much mirrors everything MLK stand for, his ideas of nonviolence, speaking out and marching together to get our views across. And almost 60 years later, it seems like we are still fighting for the same thing, which is social justice and equality.
Yeah, with the Black Lives Matter movement, I've seen a lot of people take it the wrong way. And they're like, oh, by saying Black Lives Matter, you're saying no other lives matter, but that's not what we're saying. We're trying to get our point across that we matter just as much as the next person next to us, no matter what their race is. Yes, that's why the All Lives Matter movement started, but people misinterpreted the whole point of the Black Lives Matter movement.
Because all lives can't matter until Black Lives Matter. If you're saying all lives matter and simply disregarding the Black Lives Matter movement, then you're eliminating Black lives from the equation of all lives mattering.
Yeah, definitely. Like in the last segment I was in with Aaron, we were talking about black student unions at our schools, and I brought up how a student tried to start a white student union just to combat the black student union. So that's kind of what people were trying to do by saying, oh, you can't have a Black Lives Matter movement because all lives matter.
Yeah, it's not a competition. It's not something like we're not just trying to exclude anyone. It's just talking about our experiences as being black in this country where we're not seen as equals, you know? The Black Lives Matter movement is not discriminating. It's not a discriminating movement. That's just not what it's about. It's not preaching about being like anti-white or anti-cop, anti-government. It's preaching about anti-hate, anti-inequality. It's trying to get the message across that until we are included into the equation, all lives can't matter. We're still fighting to be seen as equals, just as MLK and his movement, they were fighting for the same thing. It's trying to use our voice and trying to not be associated with the stigmas and the labels that as the black community we have been labeled with. The Black Lives Matter movement is trying to radiate positivity about being black and why it's a beautiful thing. Because back to like relating to colorism, we have been taught that our culture is not beautiful. Being in our skin, you know, isn't beautiful. Melanin isn't beautiful. Curly hair isn't beautiful, you know. We've been taught to sort of whiten the legacy or bleach down our race so we can fit to these standards from what America bases from European beauty standards and culture standards and stuff like that.
Like that kind of can go into education a little bit because like I go to Central Catholic in Pittsburgh and that's like a very prestigious school and nobody's ever asked me this, but sometimes by just looking at people, I know that they're wondering how I got into this school, and they like think that black people aren't intelligent and can't succeed to the same level that white people can. So the Black Lives Matter movement is also for us to show that we can start something good just like you can start something good.
And what you were saying about education, I've moved around several times and I've been to many different schools, and all my classmates always tend to be like really surprised about my grades. And I try to keep them high and I try to do really well in school, and everyone's just like, wow, I don't want to say it, but for a black girl, you're pretty smart. It's just like, what is that supposed to mean? Like, are you shocked that I'm smart because I'm a girl? Are you shocked that I'm smart because I'm black? Like, what is that supposed to mean? And they say that I speak so proper and I, like, have a way I carry myself that, like, my friends will say that I'm the whitest black girl they know. And it just, it hurts because I'm just so baffled that that's even a thing to, you know, say. Like, what is that even supposed to mean? How is someone supposed to interpret that when it's being said to them?
Yeah, and also I have a similar story to that. Like, I was talking to some friends of mine about college, and because I'm a senior, and that's like basically all us seniors at my school talk about, like, oh, where are you going to college? What are you planning on doing? And I started explaining what my plan was for college and what I want to do as a career. And when I told them, like, their face was in almost disbelief by what I was saying. And they said, wow, that's really impressive. I wouldn't have expected that from you. And I didn't say this to them because I didn't think it would have been right for the time. But I was thinking, why are you so shocked by this? Is it because I'm black? Is it because you haven't seen me do much good things in school? Like, why?
Is it because it doesn't immediately reflect me, or is it just another issue deeper? I can relate to that a lot because when I lived in Jersey, I would tell my friends that I like to write, and they're just like, what? Writing? But you have to get a good job. Like, sure, writing only works when you have a different skin pigment, but you probably can't make it as a writer. That just, it hurts hearing that from people you consider to be like your friends and stuff. The Black Lives Matter movement, it helped me to try to break away from these stereotypes and break away from what I've been taught I should be like. You know, I want to defy all these stereotypes, and I want to show that black is good and black matters, and why once we are included, we can show you the great things that we're capable of, because we're capable of many great things. But we are going to take a break, and we'll be back soon.
Was it Cesar Chavez? Maybe it was Dorothy Day. Some will say Dr. King or Gandhi set them on their way. No matter who your mentors are, it's pretty plain to see. If you've been to jail for justice, you're in good company. Have you been to jail for justice?
Hi, this is Sienna Rodriguez. I'm a 17-year-old senior at PA Distance Cyber.
And my name is Damari Evans. I am 17 years old, and I'm a senior at Central Catholic High School in Pittsburgh.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Streaming Justice, music and conversation about civil rights, past, present, and future, in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King Day. That song, I'm Gonna Sit at the Welcome Table, kind of reminds me of the Langston Hughes poem, I Too Sing America. And it goes, I too sing America, I am the darker brother. They send me to eat in the kitchen when company comes, but I laugh and eat well. And grow strong, cause someday I'll be at the table when company comes. Nobody will dare tell me eat in the kitchen then. Besides, they'll see how beautiful I am and be ashamed. I too am America. It's just such an empowering message to not just the black community, but for black men who are portrayed in media so harshly and are automatically criminalize because of the pigmentation of their skin. And I wanted to focus in about the American jail system.
A while back, I wrote a poem, and that Langston Hughes poem that you just recited kind of reminded me of it, this poem. And the poem, it's kind of speaking towards like police brutality and how we are portrayed in the media, and that we should like fight to like keep our purpose, because people are constantly trying to like diminish our purpose and take it away from us. The poem is called I Simply Refuse. A continuation of a war seen 150 years ago, a battle the police don't want to go. They may have the power of the gun, but I have the power of the pen. Pen versus sword, ink versus bullet. I will prevail. Actions may be stronger than words, but my words have a purpose. To get all of this to stop. You may not see it now, but you will see that we have a future and we are the future. Our bodies aren't bulletproof, but our hearts, minds, and souls, and our blood, sweat, and tears are. I am never giving in to this broken society I am forced to call home. I simply refuse.
That's such a beautiful poem, if I could say that.
So, like I was saying, that poem, it kind of speaks to all of the problems we see in America, like police brutality, poor portrayal of black people in the media. Mm-hmm. And yes, you can hold a gun to our head, and yes, you can say that you're going to shoot us, but that doesn't matter if you don't, because actions speak louder than words.
Yeah.
And you can torment us all you want, but our hearts, minds, and souls are bulletproof. Like, if someone's strong enough to fight forever, they will.
The message it's trying to get across, that you can limit our source, like our sources to the media, but it won't stop from the word getting out there. It won't stop us from doing our protests, our marches, our acts of nonviolence to get our point across. And just always like there being a negative connotation. Like growing up, I never wanted to identify myself as being a colored person, because there was always a negative connotation in association with it in the media, no matter like where I went, because I'm half African-American and half Hispanic. So the media always has its way of portraying both backgrounds as being something to be ashamed of, to be negative because of this incarceration rate and how many Hispanic students are dropping out of school. And just if you look at the demographics of the American jail system, 25% of our population is composed of the prisoners, and that's like 2 million people just there. And 40% of that is compiled of black males. And for black males born today, they have a 1 in 3 chance of going to jail in their entire lifetime. The American jail system ties into that. You think of jail and you think of all the different faces you would see, and you envision a lot of black males and a lot of Hispanic and Latinos. You envision people bulked up and covered in tattoos and with the white guys with swastikas on their forehead and stuff, being a part of their different gangs that they assemble in jail. Slavery wasn't entirely abolished because of the 13th Amendment made slavery unconstitutional with an exemption of criminals. And if you look into our jail systems in America and how they're organized, it's very different from countries like Germany, where Germany, they have rehabilitation. They train their criminals, if you would say, and they train them to go back into like different areas of work, from carpentry to all these different vocationals that they can do, so that they aren't going back and doing what they got into jail for, any violence or drug dealing or something like that. They're trying to make them better people in the end. And our jail system pretty much has them as like factories making products for most of our jail systems are privately owned. And they have them making things to profit. Our jails are for profit. And I just can't even like wrap my brain around it.
Yeah. Also, about the whole slavery thing, I like to consider it as we're in sort of like a social slavery, because we are the reason we do these things. Like, nobody's really forcing us to do anything. Yes, like someone can tell you to do something, but ultimately you have the decision to do that.
Yeah.
So we're kind of in a social slavery, and we're our own slave master, if that makes any sense. Like, we're what's stopping us from doing good things, and we're what's making us do these bad things. So yeah, that's why a lot of people end up in jail. That's why there's millions and millions of people in the American jail system, because of this social slavery, if you call it that.
Returning like inmates when they go back to jail, we have a higher retention rate, our jail system, and a lot of inmates will go back to jail because it's all they know. They have food there, they have a place to sleep, they have friends that they've established, they have their role in the jail system. And going back to regular life, it's hard because that's everywhere with them. On their record, it follows them everywhere, their incarceration. And it's kind of hard to go back to regular life from that when you were there for so long and that's all you knew.
Yeah, definitely.
For some people, like for some black males growing up in the streets and joining a gang because that's their only form of family, that's the only people who will take them in. And then ending up in jail, that's all they know. That's all they can really fall back on.
There's over, like, I forget the number, 15,000 murders in 2015. That's just an obscene number of people being murdered. And there's something like 90,000 rapes or so. So just those numbers are crazy to think about. And like, we don't know the reasons why they did those things, but there's no just reason for raping someone or killing someone unjustly. Yeah. And 71.5% of those murders had the involvement of firearms. So just to think about that, like, why are you doing this? You're setting yourself up for failure. There's nothing good that will come out of this.
Mm-hmm. And in our country, like, gun violence is very high, and almost anyone can obtain a gun. We don't have strict enough gun laws. with all honesty, like if you look at countries, like some countries in Asia, you have to have so many background checks and then so many psychological tests done, and you're still not granted the right to bear arms. That's not given to you. That's not something you have the right to. If anything, the number of men in those countries that are able to have guns in their home is very, very low. And those countries like South Korea, they have some of the lowest crime rates, lowest murder rates. And it's something that as a country we can learn from. We can learn from seeing these countries and how if we just adopt those values, we can make such an impact and such a change.
So that is all the time that we have. Thank you for supporting Streaming Justice. Next is more music and conversation about civil rights, past, present, and future, in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King Day.